Living near Cooperstown, I like to think that the 11th chapter of Hebrews might be described as a faith hall of fame, or a family tree, if you will. There are so many names listed in this chapter. There is Abel and Enoch and Noah, and of course the father of the faith, Abraham. It's kind of like a family Bible that has been passed down with successive generations adding their names. Do people still do that? I know we have one, but I don't know. These biblical ancestors all believed in something that was unseen, and they all trusted in the promises made to them by God, and they held on with faith while they waited for God's promises to be fulfilled. They and so many others in the Bible are held up for us as great examples of faith. And sometimes I wonder if that level of faith even exists anymore, including and especially in me. The world has become so complex, so scientific, so angry, that the choices we have are so much less clear, or at least it seems that way to me. Well, I will tell you that I love the game of golf, and so did Sue's mother. Some Sundays I would call to ask her where she was playing golf that day, even though she was confined to her bed. She watched golf on television all the time, and I like to watch it on TV as well. It's something that I don't mind sleeping through, as Sue will tell you. And one of the reasons we're going to Scotland is one of my places that I've always wanted to go is St. Andrews, the birthplace of Scotland. Golf was, history books tell us golf was invented in the year 1457. Maybe the oldest game on record that is still played to this day. And the story goes that the person who invented the rules of the game and wanted to create a game that imitated life. If you stayed in the middle, walked the straight and narrow in the fairway, everything would be well. But if you got off track, if you got into the rough or a hazard, well, then you were in trouble. And that sounds kind of like life, doesn't it? Well, if you've ever played golf with me, and I don't think anyone here has, I think I've only played with Warren, but if you ever did play with me, you would know another truth. Golf is unpredictable, at least the way I play it. One shot will be straight and true, sometimes landing on the green close to the hole, and the next shot will go to a place that no one else will ever see on the course. I like to say I get my money's worth when I play golf. I also have learned that life is unpredictable in a life-changing way when Sue and I live through the heartbreak of two miscarriages. You go overnight from the joy and promise of new life and a growing family to the experience of loss before you have any chance to even process what that might be. Trouble and heartache are a fact of life. We all know we can't avoid trouble no matter how hard we try. For instance, she was in high school, and it was a Friday afternoon. She had just returned home from playing tennis, and she had made plans earlier that day to go out with friends. On her way up to her room, her mom and dad called her into their bedroom. She walked in and told them that whatever they needed to tell her, it needed to be quick because she was late. Her dad sat in a chair next to his bed, taking off his shoes. Her mom stood beside him. Her dad looked up at her and said, "Sweetie, I just got back from the doctor. I have cancer." And they threw a retirement party for him. They roasted him and presented him with all sorts of awards. And he'd been with the company a long time. He was much respected. His proud and happy wife was there by his side. And when they asked him what he was going to do in his retirement, "Travel," he said. Couple went on to tell about all the trips they had planned. They went home a proud and happy couple, full of hope and expectations. And the next day when he woke up, his wife was dead. Or perhaps this. They were a good family. They had planned well, invested their money. Their adorable kids would be taken care of. One day when Dad was at work, he got a call from his wife who said, "Have you seen the news? We've lost it all." They had invested with a guy named Madoff. And that's the thing about trouble. It hardly ever says, "Ready or not, here I come." If it would, then at least we could prepare for it, or even better yet, maybe avoid it altogether. But we all know life doesn't work that way. In fact, one of the following things is true about all of us today. We or someone we know are coming out of trouble, are in the middle of trouble, or are about to face trouble. There's no denying it. One of those things is true. And because of the truth about trouble, when we are not careful, our lives can become defined by how we respond to it, by how we act or react. Think about it. Before becoming recovering addicts, people active in their addiction are often defined by the drug they use to numb themselves to their trouble. Criminals act out destructively to trouble. Atheists blame the absence of God for trouble. Narcissists exploit trouble to avoid responsibility. In The Road Less Traveled, the late M. Scott Peck went so far as to write that the reason for much of human dysfunction is our inability to face our trouble. Well, at the root of unhealthy responses to trouble lie two words, it seems to me, and those two words are fear and panic. Fear and panic prompt us to act in ways that rob life of peace and beauty and joy and hope. Fear is that feeling of being out of control, and often when we respond with panic, we grab for whatever makes us feel like we are in control, even if it's unhealthy. Does that sound familiar? Maybe you're putting on a good show for others, looking and sounding like you've got life under control, but inside you feel like you're being ripped apart at the seams. Perhaps your business is failing, or there isn't enough money to pay your bills. Maybe you can't find a job in this economy, or if you do have a job, maybe you need to find another one because the bills are still piling up. Maybe a relationship you're in is on the rocks. Maybe you're living between a doctor appointment and another one, and you are scared to death at what the outcome may be. Maybe the trouble you are facing makes you afraid, and often when you are afraid, we go into panic zone. Well, take heart, beloved. The God of our biblical ancestors offers us another response besides panic. The author of Hebrews writes that we can and will find peace in the midst of our storms. We can and will, with God's help, calm the tornadoes of trouble that rage inside of us. We can and we will find hope. All that is needed is one thing. And I know I've known people who've had this one thing. I walked into a hospital room once and saw a lady who had it. She was in her 40s, dying of breast cancer, and her friends were throwing her a birthday party. There was a cake beside her hospital bed, and she was sporting a pink party hat on her bald head, and there was music and dancing, and I thought, this is not an appropriate scene for someone who is about to die. The whole thing seemed very strange to me until I had a chance to look directly into her face and to see her eyes, to see the calm joy there in her face, and I knew that she had it. My dad had it. I would see it when he prayed. Now, We had an interesting relationship over the years, but I always knew that he had it. As a kid, I would open one eye as he prayed at the dinner table and I would watch him. And I saw it as he lived his life every day of his life, even when he knew those days were numbered. He had it. Martin Luther had it. John Calvin had it. It transformed their ministries. Countless others have had it throughout the years. You know people who have had it. We all know people in our lives who have made all the difference because they had it. It gave them courage and strength to deal with their trouble and inspiration to and the courage to do extraordinary things. By now you must know what it is. Faith. See, it goes all the way back to Abraham and before. Remember Abraham, right? It all starts with him. This whole promise of God starts with him. Because Abraham had faith, we can have faith. He had faith when God told him to leave everything he knew, and he didn't know where he was going. He had faith when God told him and his wife Sarah that they were going to have children and that Social Security was going to pay for it. In the face of all his trouble, Abraham held on to faith and never lost it. Now, throughout Scripture, the word faith can be interpreted in many ways. The verses we heard this morning don't begin to exhaust all the ways that we can talk about faith, but they do offer a clear way of understanding the importance of faith in our lives. For Christians, living our faith has to be a part of our daily living. Faith is the assurance of things hoped for and the conviction of things not seen. We all have hopes. We have dreams, things that we know are true but we have not seen. Promises we feel God has made to us. It is in faith that we cling to those and move forward. It is in faith that we are found in the presence of God. Friends, I know that we Christians are not perfect, but we don't have to be. And we Christians are not in control, and, well, we are not supposed to be. We certainly don't have all the answers, and if we had the answers, we probably wouldn't understand them anyway. We are certainly no better than other people, and thank God we're not supposed to be. We are a people who don't have all of the theological answers. In fact, we are a people who probably don't even know all of the questions yet. But we are learning, like Abraham, that God is faithful. That God can be trusted to give peace in the midst of every storm. Without faith, what has happened downstairs never, never would have happened. 6 years ago, when the water was up on the sides of the walls, how could you have seen what is here today? Only by faith. Only by faith. We are trusting and learning that God can be trusted to take what is evil and bad and destructive in the world and turn it into something good. God can be trusted to empower us in the midst of any trouble. That God can be trusted to receive and love us in everything that will ever happen to us in our lives. Writer Henry Nouwen, who you know is one of my favorites, says that he received his greatest revelation about faith out of all places, the circus. Nouwen went to see a performance by the German trapeze artists, the Flying Rodleys. Nouwen was mesmerized by their breathtaking performance as they gracefully flew through the air, and at the end of the show, he had an opportunity to speak with the leader of the troupe, Rodley himself. Nouwen asked how he was able to perform with such beauty and ease so high in the air. And Rodley responded, Well, the public might think that I am the great star of the trapeze, but the real star is Joe, my catcher. When I fly to Joe, I have simply to stretch out my arms and hands and wait for him to catch me. You see, the worst thing a flyer can do is to try and catch the catcher. I'm not supposed to catch Joe. It's Joe's job to catch me. When trouble comes, all too often we reach out and grab for something. We try to grab God, or we grab a drink, or we grab whatever it is that we use to numb ourselves from the trouble. We think if we do enough spiritual gymnastics, if we do enough fancy praying, we can somehow catch God. But it's not our job to catch God. God catches us. Always. A man once said that when he was in trouble, he cried out to God, "God, I am in deep. I'm deeper," God replied. "How deep?" the man asked. "Let's go and see," God said. "Let's go and see." Amen.